Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. Happy Monday, everybody. My name's Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambino.
I did not watch the season premiere of Game of Thrones, so I don't want any hints. Okay? No hints. I don't want to know. I'll watch it tonight.
Okay.
Diamondback game on tonight. I'll be all right. I'll watch it.
Can I?
We did not watch it last night.
I
yes.
Well, first of all,
I did not say it.
I think we should.
Everyone's going to tweet you spoilers. Now.
I'm not going on Twitter.
Okay.
I just won't go on Twitter.
Play the shame drop for Gambo.
My kid had 5 baseball games this weekend, and I drove to Tucson.
Suck it up.
To go celebrate my daughter's 23rd birthday with her. Took her out to dinner.
Are you a fan
How
or not?
Are you even? Yeah.
Exactly. Are you a fan?
What am
or
I going to say? What? You want to watch it 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'll watch it tonight. It's better. It's easier.
I don't know if Sarah.
Diamondback game on.
I don't know if Sarah watches the show, but I know Burnsy doesn't. And in Gambo's defense, it's a show that you need to be paying attention to. So if you're a little sleepy and you're in and out, it ruins it. You've got to go back and watch it again anyway.
Right.
I don't watch.
And
for the
I still have the last 2 episodes from last season that I want to watch, so that way I can kind of remember how it ended last season.
So you need to watch 3 episodes of Game of Thrones tonight?
I think we'll do that tonight. I think we'll probably go from 7 to 10 tonight watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I want to watch I saved the last 2 episodes from last year.
Okay.
Because what happens is it takes so long to make the damn thing, and then you forget what happened. So I saved the last 2. I'm going to watch the last 2, and then we'll watch.
That's sort of a primer for tonight's episode.
Basically, primer.
I know I'm going to watch this show eventually. I know I am. I just need to start it.
It seems like a
massive undertaking at this point to try to watch it from the beginning now.
But I think, in all honesty, it's the best show I've ever watched.
Wow.
It's the best. Walking Dead, that got so tired after a few years. It's the same thing.
Quick, around the table. Yeah. Best TV show you ever watched?
Arrested Development.
Okay.
The Wire.
The Wire was good.
I mean, I'm going Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Okay,
you're going Lost.
No, I'm actually, there's one I saw that I thought was better.
Really?
The Americans.
Mm. Oh, wait, hold on. Can I put in an honorable mention?
Please do.
24.
Yes.
If we're doing honorable mentions, then I need to throw out Breaking Bad.
Okay.
I got to go 24.
If I'm going honorable mentions, I'm going Lost. Or maybe Friday Night Lights. One of the 2. That was really good, too. So, all right.
Good. There we go.
All right, so
give me our poll question.
Try to go. Oh, that is good. There's so many choices, though.
So many choices.
It's like favorite TV show
On behalf of the Burns and Gambo Show, please do not tweet any spoilers from last night. I'll side with you on this one.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't ruin Gambo's. Speaking of a spoiler alert, let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Just when you thought the NFL draft had been spoiled, everybody thinks they're going to take Kyler Murray. Everybody thinks the Cardinals are going to go with the Oklahoma quarterback number 1. There's a real whiff of doubt in the air now about what the Arizona Cardinals are going to do at number 1 in a week and
a
half.
People are getting nervous because they've been on that Kyler Murray bandwagon for 3 weeks now, and now with the draft coming down 10 days away, we're like,
are you really going to do it?
Rosen's not on the trade block, and I haven't traded him yet, and Murray's visiting all these other teams. Maybe this isn't going to happen.
Maybe this is
not going
to
happen.
There seems to be this vibe, kind of like. And I don't want to say everybody has the vibe. A few people have the vibe. Daniel Jeremiah over at the NFL Network, he got a lot of attention locally and on our website, arizonasports.com, for a tweet that he had this morning. He tweeted out, April 1st confidence meter.
I saw this.
Kyler Murray, 90% chance is going to be the first over pick.
It's about what it was, right? Every mock draft had him going. Yep. They all started to jump in line. Okay.
So that was on April 1st. 90% was his confidence meter that Kyler Murray was going to go number 1. 15 days later, he's putting his confidence meter down at only 60%.
That confidence meter is dropping.
And the reason,
look at the headlines today. Yahoo Sports. Here's why the Arizona Cardinals drafting Kyler Murray isn't such a lock. You go to Pro Football Talk. What if Arizona doesn't draft Kyler Murray with the number 1 pick? You go to Fansided. Are the Cardinals still going to take Kyler Murray at number 1? is it's just everywhere you go. It's, you know, oh, Yard Barker, Cardinals becoming less likely to draft Kyler Murray?
Sure.
I mean, it's just like everybody's now like skeptical, like, okay, this might not be happening because he's like going to visit all these other teams and the Cardinals, Rosen showed up at voluntary workouts and they're not trading Josh Rosen just yet. So like people that have jumped on that Kyler Murray bandwagon. And I will say this, I think me and you have both kind of been in the same boat. I don't know. I've never claimed to know. I think I will know eventually, but I don't know now. And I've always kind of felt like I still think they're going to trade the pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've always been like, my gut feeling, they're going to trade the pick. That's always been what I thought. There was a time when I was like, maybe they will take Murray, but overwhelmingly, and I've probably been like, maybe 10% of me thought they could take Murray. I've kind of been like, they're either going to take Bosa or they're going to trade the pick, but I still think the best thing for them is to trade the pick and get a whole bunch of picks. Now, again, no idea what they're going to do, just like you, but you've always wanted them to trade the pick.
I've always wanted them to trade the pick.
I've kind of felt like that's probably what's going to happen, but when all this Murray stuff was happening, it was very difficult to ignore the reality that all of these experts were just pegging Murray to the Cardinals.
I think Doug said it best this morning on the Doug and Wolf show, and I had never quite thought of it like this, but saying that you're going to draft Murray 1 year after you drafted Rosen sounds great in February. It sounds great in March. When it comes time to actually do it, suddenly you start seeing all the complications of it, because now it turns into, okay, if we draft Murray, we have to trade Rosen. What if we only get third-round offers for Rosen? Do we still really want to trade Rosen? And we can threaten to keep Rosen all we want, but is anybody actually going to believe that we're going to do that? And do we really want to sell Rosen? So all of these things that sounded great in theory a month ago, hell, 2 weeks ago, now that it's time to actually do it, right? It doesn't.
It's
hard to pull the trigger.
It's hard to pull the trigger.
And you know what? Peter King wrote about this morning on Football Morning in America. He said, there's one thing I can tell you about Steve Keim and Terry McDonough, the guys who run the personnel department, obviously the GM of the Arizona Cardinals. He said, when it comes to confidence in themselves, you will not find two of the more confident personnel guys in the NFL. Maybe not the best, but in terms of their belief in themselves and what they're going to do, you will not find more confident personnel guys on too many other rosters than what the Cardinals have. They are very confident in their ability to get this right. So maybe this doubt that we're feeling about what's going on out there, maybe they don't share that. Maybe
they
have a really sturdy, strong belief. Mm-hmm. No, we know exactly what we're doing, and we're going to pull this off exactly the way we envision it.
I think they know. Listen, we're going to have a little bit of insight throughout the course of the show on, like, second round. Some players that they're going to be targeting in the second round. It could be in play for them. And so, like, you know, maybe at 2:30 and 3:30 and 4:30, we'll go over a list, and it'll be like five players that we believe will be targeted there. Obviously, things can change if these guys go early and stuff like that. But, you know, but the first round, today, as far as right now, still just not really sure. Don't know what the feeling is on what they're going to do. I mean, if I had to tell you what I think they're going to do right now, I think they're going to trade the pick.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Stand by for, over the course of today, as you mentioned, kind of a sprinkling of second round names to keep an eye on.
We've got five.
Yeah. As part of the Cardinals QB1, the franchise focus, part two airs tomorrow on the Doug and Wolf show at 7:30. Carson Palmer and Kurt Warner both on with Doug and Wolf talking about this big dilemma and decision for the Cardinals. Carson Palmer, you do not draft Murray unless he is a drastic upgrade.
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, you don't draft Kyler Murray unless he's a drastic upgrade from Josh Rosen. If he's just a little bit better, then you got problems.
Meanwhile, Todd McShay this morning on Doug and Wolf was asked where he would rank Josh Rosen among this year's rookie quarterbacks if he were coming out this year compared to last. Here's what he said.
I would rank him one, but again, I would rank him one for most teams. For Arizona, I think, and I haven't talked to Cliff about it, and everyone is just assuming, but it would depend on the scheme and what we're trying to do. But it would be Josh, and then it would be Kyler, and then it would be Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State, and then it would be Drew Lock from Missouri, and those would be the only first-round quarterbacks, in my opinion, in this class.
But can you look at it that way? Can you look at it, if you're the Cardinals, can you say, okay, let's compare Rosen to this class? Or is it more like, let's compare Rosen and Murray to Cliff Kingsbury and his system?
Which way should you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you should do it the second way. I suppose you should do it the latter of those two choices that you gave.
Okay, let me ask you something real quick.
Yeah.
What is more likely to happen? What's more likely? That Rosen stays longer in a Cardinals uniform? That Rosen stays longer in the NFL, or Kingsbury stays longer as the Cardinals coach?
Rosen stays quarterback in the NFL. I think just based off of the history of coaches, turnover, how long they tend to last, I would think, would you disagree?
Are you hoping you have Pete Carroll? You're hoping you have Bill Belichick? You're hoping you have a guy that's going to be
you're
a 10, 15
but
years?
I think quarterbacks tend to have longer shelf lives, than head coaches do. Yeah, I would.
Jordan, Rosen in the NFL as a player, or Kingsbury as coach of the Cardinals, which lasts longer?
Definitely Rosen in the NFL.
Okay.
Yeah,
sometimes quarterbacks flame out after five or six years.
Oh, sure they do, but sometimes coaches flame out after a year.
It's true.
Or two. Just for what it's worth, we mentioned Daniel Jeremiah's tweet. The reason why his confidence is dropping as quickly as it is, he does not understand why Kyler Murray continues to take visits with teams that theoretically should not be in a position to draft him.
Right.
And that's why he's like, because if I'm the Cardinals and I've told him I'm taking you number one, why do you need to go visit the Redskins?
Right.
Why do you need to go visit the Giants? There's just no – and that's just – those aren't sources talking to him. That's just his experience in the business as a former scout. I don't know why he would need to take those visits if he had a sense he was going to go to the Cardinals number one.
Unless he's not going to the Cardinals at number one.
Yeah. The Arizona Diamondbacks avoided the dreaded four-game sweep, and in the process – did they just find themselves a new rival out west? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Once upon a time, losing 3 of 4 at home to the Padres would have been shameful for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Is it shameful anymore, given the upgrades they've made to that roster over there?
They look legit. I mean, their middle relief is not good. Their pitching is very, very young. They're rolling out all these rookie pitchers. But they look legit. That offense with Fernando Tatis is a good offense. They're going to score some runs. And they've just had, the most successful road trip. Now they're going home. We've kind of like, after they added Machado, they had a Hosmer last year, Machado, the White Sox trade, the Tatis. Kind of had the feeling like, in a couple of years, they're going to be pretty good. But they're starting to have some success right now. So they might be a team that, this year makes a little bit of a move. Maybe they're in contention for a playoff spot, but I would really be worried about them for the next few years.
Mercifully, yesterday, the Diamondbacks were able to stop the bleeding. They ended a four-game losing streak. The last time they had won before yesterday was the last time Zach Greinke was on the bump. He was on the bump again yesterday. He came through on the mound at the plate. David Peralta came through big time in a pinch-hit role yesterday.
Yeah, the first one to Peralta. And David swings, hits it down the left field line. That ball's got a chance, and it is gone! A three-run pitch homer for David Peralta. His second home run of the season. And that lifts the Diamondbacks to a 6-2 lead over the Padres.
That was a pinch hit homer right there in the sixth inning.
He's on fire right now.
Absolutely. Zach Greinke, 2 hits. He scored a couple of runs as well.
Two more hits for Greinke against the Padres.
Was he hit like 400 something?
Homers, and then he had a bloop single, and then he had a double. He scored 2 runs. I mean, the catalyst for the offense, Zach Greinke.
Indeed, no doubt about it. And on the mound, 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, walked 1, 6 strikeouts, gave up the 2 home runs. His ERA still sitting around 6, but it was a good effort from Zach Greinke, and he kind of became their stopper a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, Hirano struggled again. His ERA is now at 7.94, gave up 2 more runs on 3 hits. But the biggest story of the game, honestly, was Greg Holland. He got the save. He struck out 2 in the 9th, and a lot of people you might remember when Machado popped up in foul territory and it kind of threw the bat at the ground near John Ryan Murphy. Well, then, on Saturday, a couple of Diamondback players got hit. I don't think it was intentional. final.
Escobar. And Escobar was barking.
It was a reliever came in. You really think he wanted to walk him? He didn't want to walk him. There's two guys that got hit yesterday. It was on Saturday. It was Peralta and Escobar got hit. Escobar was definitely barking. But Padres are trying to hold on to that lead. They're trying to win that game. They weren't hitting those guys on purpose. So Holland.
I've got the play-by-play right here.
I might as well go for it then, yeah.
Okay, so yesterday, here's Holland facing Francisco Mejia.
Holland is ready. Mejia batting left-handed. And the first pitch on the way. And it's at his feet, and he has to jump rope to get out of the way. Ball one.
Right about knee-high, way inside.
Tabex had a couple of players hit last night in the ballgame. Mejia really had to get out of the way of that one.
The very next pitch, and this is not a replay.
Here's the 1-0. And that one behind him, and that's ball two, 2-0. Well, Holland looks toward the San Diego dugout. They're pointing at him. And I think it's Derek Hosmer, his former Kansas City teammate, who's leading the yelling out of the dugout. No warning or anything from Mike Winters.
Every pitch he threw was really good to the last two.
Yeah. Attaboy, Candy.
I took a video of it. I sent it to my guy, Kurt Schilling, and I said, hey, Schill. I said, he's trying to hit him, right? He goes, 100%. Yeah, 100% he's trying to hit him. Yeah, he's trying to hit him. Two Diamondbacks got hit on Saturday. You've got the incident with Machado. And listen, Jordan mentioned this. I mean, maybe this will lead to a good rivalry. Teams hate each other, a little bad blood, a little fighting going on. I mean, the Green was comments. Yeah, this is fantastic.
This is from Fox Sports San Diego after the game. He called the umpires clueless.
And umpires being literally clueless on the field right now. That's inexcusable at that point in time. You'd love to be able to make an excuse for him, but there's no excuse right there. The first one, okay, maybe slips. The second one, we know what's going on there. It's not lost on us at all. If it's lost on them, they're not paying attention to the baseball game.
Okay. So now that them's fighting words right there, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's going to get
the first one. Okay, maybe it slips. The second one, we know what's going on there.
Literally clueless. Torey Lovello, on the other hand, took the very typical tact when it came to this.
I don't know. I think they were just some misses. To be honest with you, I don't know exactly what's going on. So I haven't had a chance to look at the location or talk to anybody. But, look, you got three outs and end of the game. That's all I'm really concerned about. We won the baseball game.
I don't know how the lipstick ended on my collar. I'm not really sure how it got there. I don't know what happened.
I don't know whose phone number that is.
Exactly. I don't.
Are we transitioning to Tiger Woods talk already?
No, that's coming up. That's coming up.
So soon.
Sarah for the win. No, we'll be talking about Tiger, I believe at 2:30, as a matter of fact, so we'll be transitioning to that very soon.
I don't know how that car got wrapped around that pole.
I really don't. Sorry, honey, I'm not really sure how that happened. Torey playing the game that managers play. I mean, that's how it goes. But will it lead to we were talking about this, as you mentioned a second ago, in the prep room. It seems like at one point in time or another, the Diamondbacks have had a little mini rivalry with just about every team in the division. Started the San Diego Padres.
Started with, it was Buck Showalter and was it Colorado or San Francisco with Buck?
Think it was Colorado.
Might have been Colorado.
Think it was Colorado.
Then it was something with San Francisco. Obviously the Dodgers with, you know, Gibby and McGuire and Mattingly and Daniel Hudson and Clayton Kershaw and the point in and the peeing in the pool. And all of that stuff. And now maybe there could be something between the Padres and the D-backs. Now, I don't think they play here again until like September.
Like, oh, really? I don't think
you see them again until September. I don't think you're going to see them here for a long time.
I did not look at the schedule, but
I think we go all of May, all of June, all of July, and maybe all of August without seeing San Diego here.
The Diamondbacks are there on May 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
Right.
So coming up in a couple of weeks. But in terms of
San Diego,
just go
through the rest of May, the rest of June, July. Okay. And again, I don't even think they see him here in August. So the rivalry, which if there is a rivalry, and listen, it would be great if there is. But you hope the Padres are going to get better and they're going to be good. You want the Diamondbacks as well to be a good baseball team.
The next time the San Diego Padres are here, it is September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
So you go the rest of April, all of May, all of June, all of July, all of August without seeing San Diego.
Yeah.
That's a long time for a division rival not to be here.
Yeah, it is. You'll see him one time in between, but you'll see him there. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it being a rivalry is this, you know, kind of extracurricular stuff that's going on, and the other part of it is that both teams are competing for something. I think the Padres will hold up their end of the bargain in that regard. I don't know if the Diamondbacks will. You know, Bickley said it earlier, and I thought he nailed it when he said that basically the Diamondbacks have played a tenth of their season. They've played 16 games so far. They're 7-9, which is like a football record, right? They kind of look like a 7-9 football team. Based off where their record is, if you think about what a 7-9 NFL team looks like,
okay.
I think that's about what the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to be this year. And I think you do too, mostly. You've got a little bit of a lower win total than I do based off of our preseason predictions. But I think you had, 73? I think I had 77 when it was all said
yes.
and done, right? Yeah. They I don't know if they're going to be good enough this year to make it a true rivalry with San Diego. There might be two teams that don't like each other, but I don't know if the Diamondbacks are going to be good enough to keep up with
them. I do hope, in all honesty, like one of the main things that I'm looking for this year is that Zach Greinke continues to pitch well. Had that really bad first outing against the Dodgers, has been better since. Because what I'm really hoping for is the ability to trade him at the deadline.
Yes.
And get something for him and get out for that contract to allow Mike Hazen to have a little more flexibility to do some things to make the roster better next year.
Tomorrow, Ticket Window Tuesday, and it's presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to the 9th annual Larry Fitzgerald Double Play Celebrity Softball Game. It's coming up on April 27th. Listen tomorrow at 7:15, 10:15, 12:15, and 4:15. For your chance to win. So in addition to the first overall pick, which has been highly speculated upon, obviously, Cardinals have the first pick in the second round. Who could be on their radar? We'll give you two names to keep an eye on next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell is standing by with today's Twitter poll question of the day. Hi, Sarah.
Indeed. Hello.
What's going on? What do you have?
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about, shocker, Kyler Murray.
Well, we never talk about him.
We don't cover this nearly enough.
Yeah,
so,
we really don't.
So over the weekend, I know you guys heard that Mel Kiper Jr. said he is 99% sure that he'll be going to the Cardinals with the number one overall pick.
I think he said 99.9, actually. Yeah.
That is correct, 99.9.
You know, if you're going to do that, just say 100.
Right?
Come on.
Daniel Jeremiah said today his confidence meter is down to 60 that Kyler will be going number one overall. So we wanted to know, our listeners, how confident are you that Kyler will be the number one overall pick to the Cardinals specifically, not is he just going to be the overall pick? So right now we've got 38% saying 0 to 25% confident that Kyler will be the top pick for the Cardinals. 31% say 26 to 50%. 19% say 51 to 75% confident. And then only 12% are 76 to 100% confident as we get closer and closer.
I'd probably put myself in the 25 to 50 category.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's where I'd be.
Nice and measured, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm 30% confident. I mean, look, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I have no idea what they're going to do. I have no idea what they're going to do. I still think they should trade it. If you ask me what I think they should do, I still think they should trade it.
I'd like to say this. I know what they're not going to do. They're not going to take Quinnen Williams with the number one overall pick.
Well, you are a big process of elimination guy. I know.
Process of elimination.
Yes,
yeah.
And you
eliminate the process. Whatever it is.
Deduction.
Yes, the process of taking Quinnen Williams has been eliminated for you.
Yeah, there's some saying. Yeah, whatever. No Quinnen Williams number one. I'll go Bosa. I think Bosa's number one if they're not taking Kyler Murray and trading the pick. Bosa over Quinnen Williams. I'm going to stick with that.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Bosa over Quinnen Williams.
Yeah, I still think it's one of those three options. It's Murray, trade, or Bosa. I just, in terms of assigning a percentage to each one, I could not do that.
All right, so here's what we're going to do.
All right, so yeah, what are we going to do? Here's what we're going to do.
Here's what we're going to do here. 2:30, 3:30, 4:30.
Yes.
I'm going to spread it out a little bit and got some names for you. I think as, you know, Burnsy has learned, a lot of people, I don't guess at stuff like this. This isn't guess. This isn't guesswork, so we'll give you some names at 2:30, some names at 3:30, some names at 4:30.
There are we're going to sprinkle this in throughout the course of the show. Obviously, we've established that while we have our best guesses for what they're going to do, number one overall, we're just not exactly sure yet. You're pretty confident that you will know at some point, but you don't think you know. You don't know just yet.
No.
The second round is a bit of a different deal. The second round is the 33rd pick overall. There's going to be some very, 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 very good talent available at number 33.
I mean, and like you've said all along, that pick can also be traded. That's a good pick to either trade up into the first round to get that extra year, or you trade down because somebody's so in love with the player that they didn't get in the first round and want to grab him at 33. It's a very strong possibility that pick could be traded.
Yep.
But in case it's not traded and they do make a pick, we want to go over some of the players that are
All right, so let's go over two of the players that the Cardinals might consider with the 33rd pick overall in the draft if they decide to stay there based off of what you have heard. Player number one.
And one of these guys, we'll give it to you in a second, is going to be a wide receiver.
Ooh.
So the second player I'm going to give you is going to be a wide receiver. But let's start with an offensive lineman who could play center or guard out of North Carolina State, Garrett Bradbury. I was looking at something from Daniel Jeremiah. Says he checked the final box today. Excellent fall season, consistent Senior Bowl, tested well at the combine, interviewed well, outstanding pro day. He'll be a 10-year starter at center, plug-and-play dude. Garrett Bradbury. Now, I'm not into the mock drafts. A lot of people think that I was reading something in Baltimore that he's become one of the preferred mock draft choices for the Ravens with their 22nd pick. And he could be a guy that's gone by the time the Cardinals pick at 33. So I'm well aware of that. But that is one name that I'm expecting the Cardinals to be keeping their eye on. If he does fall, you know, you get a guy that's just a rock-solid player at 33 in Garrett Bradbury.
Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Combine talked about how unique Bradbury is.
He's just a unique player because of his quickness and his ability to get things done laterally. Watch how quick he is off the ball, his ability to reach. I call him the Grim Reacher. He's just got that first step quickness, gets his head around. Watch the distance he covers to reach him, square him up, seal it, and now look what your running back has to work off of when you get that type of a block in the run game.
Okay, now if he could bring that nickname with him here to Arizona, that'd be cool. The Grim Reacher?
The Grim Reacher.
That's a fantastic nickname. Jeremiah.
Who has the cult, Seasons Don't Fear the Reaper. I play that song for him every time we talk about him.
Yeah, but Seasons Don't Fear the Reacher is how they would go. Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah, again, from the Combine. Bradbury could go in the mid-30s, but his claim.
To me, early in the process, when you're kind of putting your list together, you say, okay, he's in the 30s. And then as you get closer to the draft, you say, what's wrong with this guy? I mean, you're picking in the 20s. You need a center. This guy's going to man that position for you for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I'm looking
So there's a guy. No, he played guard, and then he moved to center. He won the Remington Award as the nation's top center. He's a senior. This is a solid, like you just heard, plug-and-play guy for 10 years, could play center, could play guard, offensive lineman at 33, moving up, right? A lot of people had him in the 30s, but now people are saying he's starting to move up a little bit right now. Everybody wants offensive line
help. I do wonder let's say it's him for a second. I do wonder with the seemingly kind of having a glut at the center position, right, with Mason Cole having started every game last year with A.Q. Shipley coming back from the injury. Would they be hypothetically drafting a Garrett Bradbury to move him to one of the guard positions, knowing that they drafted Mason Cole as a third rounder just a year ago and they still have a year left of A.Q. Shipley? Would they throw him into the mix to compete at the center spot right away? I do wonder sort of if it's him, what the long-term vision would be for him in terms of where he fits on the interior of that offensive line.
I don't know that. I just know that his versatility, having played guard and play center, really allows you to have both. I mean, depending on Mason Cole, I mean, he did play guard.
Yeah.
And he does play center. So you could just battle it out, and you've got guys. A lot of those centers can play guard.
Sure, sure.
A lot of the centers can easily move to guard, and a lot of guards can move to center. So it just gives you the versatility to have those, a couple of different guys that can play those positions.
Name number two is a wide receiver.
It is a wide receiver.
But it is not the one you're thinking of.
No.
Or hoping for.
Wide receiver that I'm expecting to be looked at heavily if he is available at pick 33. And again, this is if the Cardinals stay at 33 and don't trade into the first round or trade back. But if they stay there, Ole Miss wide receiver A.J. Brown is a coveted target at that 33 spot. Now, he's projected to go anywhere. I've seen first round, third round. This kid is legit. I mean, 6 foot, 226. He put up big numbers in two different years, which is something I think a lot of people are going to like about him. It's not like a fluke one-year thing. I mean, he put up some really good numbers, and I'll just give you those numbers in a second because I was just looking at them. But he ran the 40-yard dash in 4.49 seconds, or just under 4.5. Bench pressed 225 pounds 19 times. 36.5-inch vertical leap. So you're talking about a player that really did well at the combine. And then you look at the numbers. 85 catches for 1,320 yards and 6 touchdowns last year. 2 years ago, 75 catches for 1,252 yards and 11 touchdowns. So it's not a one-year fluke. That was 2 years of flat-out dominance, for A.J. Brown at Mississippi.
From him? This is him from the combine?
Personally, I'm the best receiver in the draft, by far. I'm versatile, I can play inside and outside. I'm on great routes, I have strong hands, I'm a man after the catch. You know, a lot of guys not like that, and I'm very different.
To take an offensive lineman or a wide receiver would scratch an itch for a lot of Cardinal fans, because obviously those are two positions.
Sure.
Major.
I like
major,
bigger wide major. Receivers. I mean, I'd like somebody more like in the 6'2", 6'3", range. He said I could play outside, I could play inside. I'm versatile enough. He thinks he's the best receiver. Very, very talented. He can get up there. He's got the good vertical and everything. But he's had a lot of visits too. You know, Packers, the Colts, the Patriots, the Eagles, the Giants, the Redskins, the Bills. There's a lot of teams that really like him. I wish they would get a little bit bigger of a receiver, but it's not like he's 5'10".
All right, Garrett Bradbury, the center from NC State, and AJ Brown, the wide receiver from Ole Miss. We'll have a couple more names coming up a little later on in the show. Regardless, if you love him or hate him, there's really no denying that yesterday was pretty cool there for a minute or two. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Waited for years. Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. Yeah! The return to glory.
It's hard to really feel bad about what I or how I played, just because, you know, I just witnessed history.
It's great to see obviously Tiger doing well, but you know, the way he was playing last year, I think we all knew it was coming sooner or later.
Not the end of it I wanted to be on, but to be able to witness that, you know, handful of years ago, I don't know if a lot of people believed that Tiger would win another major. So from what I saw today, obviously he's doesn't look like he's going anywhere anytime soon. And congrats to him on his 15th major.
Just some of the guys that Tiger Woods was competing against yesterday, Finau and Molinari.
Molinari!
I'll ask you.
Makes a good sauce.
Because we talked about this on Friday. When push came to shove yesterday, were you truly rooting against Tiger Woods? Were you?
Yeah,
because
totally
you said
was.
On Friday that you wouldn't, that you would not root for him.
I wasn't rooting for him.
Tell me why. Tell me why.
You know what? I know we're a country of, you know, second chances and building people back up, and we like to tear them down. You remember the feeling when Tiger threw his whole life away?
Yes.
I threw his whole life away. I mean, right. I found out, man, this guy's a bum. Like, you know, and now all of a sudden now it's like, okay, let's root for him and cheer him back up. I mean, I'm just not like that. It's
you're not a big believer in second chances. You know, you're not a big believer in forgiveness. You're not a big believer in, hey man, he put his life back together again, and let him go see if he can have some success. You don't those concepts don't mean much to you?
I wasn't rooting for him.
Okay, well, no, I'm just asking. I mean, I'm not trying to paint you in some sort of corner or anything.
No, it's fine.
I'm just trying to, you know.
I mean, a lot of people were. Obviously, you hear the cheers of the crowd, and Vegas took a bath on it, right? Because people were betting 12-1, 15-1, whatever the odds were early.
Yeah.
They got killed. I'm not sitting there rooting for Tiger Woods to break Jack Nicklaus's record. I don't want him to break it. You know, I mean, when all the stuff came out, and the guy had like 800 affairs, and he was with the women at the diner, and then just... You know, kind of came out that he wasn't such a good guy. You know, he wasn't such a good person. You know, I'm like, okay. I mean, people make mistakes.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah.
And he got his life back on track. And, you know, good for him. I mean, you know, I'm certainly not, you know, I'm not actively rooting against him. Like, oh, I hope this guy never, but I'm not rooting for him. You know, I'm not rooting for the guy.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, you know, it's not like I sat, did I want him to win? No. I mean, I didn't really want him to win.
Yeah.
Am I upset that he did? No, not really upset that he did. Story's great. I mean, I understand it. The story's fantastic. And, you know, we could talk about that all day long because it was a phenomenal story. And I get that. I get that people were mesmerized by Tiger being able to win a major all these years later.
That's a great word. I was mesmerized by yesterday. I'm not much of a golf fan. I get nostalgic about baseball. I don't get that nostalgic about golf. You know, I couldn't tell you where I was when Jack Nicklaus, you know, won it back in 86 and coming back on the back nine the way he did. I know golf fans can tell you exactly where they were when I couldn't
Phil Mickelson
where I was.
Won his first major.
Or when Tiger won the Masters for the first time and he had that big hug with his dad. But I know that there was this undeniable kind of feeling. I wasn't like moved to tears or anything, but when he comes off the 18th, right, and his son runs up into his arms and they have that big hug, and then CBS kind of superimposes the hug that he had, that Tiger had with his father all those years ago. I don't know how, and I'm not saying you, Gambo, I'm just saying you in general, I don't know how you couldn't be at least somewhat stirred by that moment.
He's great for the sport.
Oh, there's no doubt. Oh,
he's great for the sport. I can't wait to see what the ratings are.
Oh, they're huge.
I mean, I can't wait.
I've already seen some of the preliminary number. Oh, they're
great for the sport. I mean, and where he fell to, like this guy was number one in the world for 281 consecutive weeks, and then he fell to 1,199th in the world. 1,199. Like his, I mean, listen, it's a mental game, right? And mentally, he was screwed up. Man, he was messed up mentally. Lost his wife, family, like everything that he had. And then, you know, the perception that people had of him, that he was this great guy. And then when people started finding out all these stories about him, it was like, oh my God, this guy, he's not such a great guy. And so mentally, he was shot. I mean, he had not won a major since 2008, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. That's 3,954 days.
Sure.
It's the fifth longest drought in majors history. He had gone 0 for his last 28 in majors that he played in. 0 for his last 28.
I took a screenshot of this today. Masters final round live coverage, highest rated morning golf broadcast in 34 years. The combined Masters final round live coverage, just big numbers. And they could have gone even bigger. Look, I put what Tiger did in almost two categories. All right.
Okay.
And I don't follow me on this one if you can.
Sure.
Okay. The mental of what he did, you know, the coming back emotionally and his confidence being shot and finding out that he wasn't such a bad guy. To me, that doesn't put Tiger in a unique set of circumstances. He is far from the first professional athlete to have an extramarital affair with his wife, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He is not in some unique you believe what
400?
I understand that, but he is not alone in that world. So I don't, that to me doesn't put this comeback in some kind of special category. The fact that he was ranked 1,199th in the country, in the world. The fact that he had not one, not two, not three, four different back surgeries. The fact that he had to take a painkiller, an injection, just to sit down at the champions dinner 2 years ago at Augusta. I almost separate Tiger into the mental grind that he had to come back from.
That's fair.
And then the physical grind. Physical grind he had to come back from is one of the greatest comeback stories in sports.
Okay.
I'm buying that. The fact that he had to come back from what he did to his wife, and I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm not trying to say that makes it okay. I just don't think that makes him special in that regard, because he's not the only one. He's not alone in that category by any stretch in terms of trouble that he might have gotten into with his wife because of things he was doing when he shouldn't have been doing them. That's not that unique in that.
That's true. If I may jump in for a second, what didn't bug me about yesterday was the fact that Tiger won. I mean, that was super impressive, like you said, coming down the stretch. There were, five guys tied for the lead? That was insane, the way he was able to pull that out. The lack of accountability and the way that the story was being framed. Oh, he came back with so much against him. Oh, so much has happened to Tiger, and look what he's done now. The low point of his life, he did to himself.
Yeah.
And that's what bugs me. So many people were framing it. I literally saw the tweet yesterday. this is like the end of a Disney movie. And I'm like, what in the world Disney movie are you watching? And in his post-win interview with Jim Nantz, he the way he referred to the low point of his life, to what we're talking about, was the events that transpired. He didn't say didn't involve himself. Sure. Events that transpired.
Who was Prince Charming with? What Disney movie was that? Prince Charming was with
Sleeping Beauty.
Okay. Yes. Find out that Prince Charming also was dating Ariel and Belle and Cinderella.
And the Hunchback.
And, Snow White.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. Right?
All the Pixar characters. The girl from Brave.
Right.
And that's why I separate
right.
them.
He loses Snow White. And now,
And to Sarah's point, I didn't notice it as obviously as you did, but at one point, one of the broadcasters yesterday called it a Cinderella story. Tiger Woods and what he did yesterday is a lot of things. That is not a Cinderella story, what he did. I mean,
not if you do it to yourself.
That's not Cinderella. Cinderella is, you know, you're living in poverty and your stepsisters are wicked, awful creatures and you have absolutely no chance of any kind of life and you stumble upon these one. It was not a Cinderella story. It was something, but don't call it a Cinderella story.
Okay, but if he had never messed up his life, see, nobody thinks about this part about it. If he had never messed up his life as bad as he did, and you're right, he did it to himself. He did that to himself.
How many of these would he have won?
I mean, yeah.
Oh, I think he would have had the record by now.
Well, he might be at 25 now.
I think he would have shot past
the game
record.
Changed. Okay, he was 40th in distance. 40th in distance, the drive off the tee, 40th. So the games changed. The technology changed. In the beginning, he was just outdistancing everybody. He won that game because of his knowledge of the course and because his putting was really good. Okay, he was smart. He won it with his smarts. So obviously, people would have caught up to him because of the technology. He was getting older. And he brought a lot of people into the sport that were never there before.
Well, most of the guys he's competing with
were brought into the sport because of his greatness. Yeah.
Fans of him growing up. Look,
So I'm not saying that he would have had, he would have had 30 by now. He would have won every one, but he'd have more than 15. Jack's record would have been broken now, and he would just be adding to that.
But at the core of what happened yesterday, I did enjoy watching it.
Totally.
It was, to borrow a Gambo word, it was mesmerizing. It was mesmerizing to watch how that all unfolded. It really was. Could it have been? But CBS was never going to frame it with all of its warts and all of its flaws. Yeah. I mean, never going to frame it like that, right?
Even once. That's just, irresponsible journalism, but that's a whole different radio show.
Earlier, we told you about some experts cooling on the idea about the Cardinals taking Kyler Murray. How is that affecting all those Josh Rosen trade rumors out there? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.